I appreciate the opportunity for folks to join me this morning. Just concluded a working lunch with 28 agricultural ministers and commissioners and representatives from the EU states and countries. It was an opportunity for a frank discussion. It was important, I think, for me to express to all the member states my belief that we have much in common in terms of agriculture, that our farmers are faced with the same concerns and opportunities as the European farmers are, and that as a result, not only do our farmers have much in common, but that we as ag ministers and secretaries and commissioners have much in common as well. One of the things that's that we have in common is the importance of market opportunity that allows producers to have a chance of profiting from agricultural production, and that the importance of having diversity of opportunity, not only local and regional food systems, but also the ability to export, extraordinarily important. And key to export opportunities, obviously, are free and fair trade agreements, not the least of which is the negotiation which has begun in terms of a free trade agreement between the EU and the U.S. I wanted to emphasize in my meeting today, which was historic in nature, the opportunity and the necessity that agriculture has got to be part of and a significant part of whatever the trade discussions and negotiations ultimately end up being with reference to TTIP. I was very candid with my colleagues that absent a real commitment to a strong commitment to agriculture in this trade agreement, it would be very difficult for Congress to be able to get the votes necessary to pass TTIP, and I wanted to make sure they knew and understood how important it was that we have negotiate some of the challenges and difficulties that we'll confront in these negotiations. I thought it was important that they understand and appreciate that they need to be engaged as we need to be engaged in talking about tariffs, non-tariff barriers, sanitary and phytosanitary issues, not the least of which was an extended conversation of geographic indicators, biotechnology, cloning, regulatory simplification, and pathogen reduction treatments, all of which are serious issues that require some thought and some willingness to figure out creative solutions to the differences that currently exist in these areas. I thought it was also very important for us to convey the message that we have a common goal, which is expanding markets, and we have a common language when it comes to dealing with these difficult issues. And that common language is the language of science and a commitment to science and to letting science dictate and direct how we solve these problems will allow consumers to have choice and be able to make the decisions they feel best for themselves, and allow the producers in our country and in their countries also have options and choices. This is the first meeting of a series of meetings that will take place tomorrow, a series of meetings with individual ministers and commissioners here in Brussels, and then ultimately in France as well, ending the trip in Ireland, visiting with folks in Ireland. So I think a very strong start to a very important and important but obviously difficult conversation. Operator, I'm happy to answer questions if there are any.
Our first question comes to the line of Chris Clayton, DTN. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Secretary. Touching on what you just said about biotechnology, I was wondering if you could talk a little about the EU's push to possibly allow each individual state to make a decision on biotechnology. Did that come up in your meeting, and how would that affect what you're trying to do here with TTIP?
Well, we didn't specifically, Chris, we didn't specifically discuss the opt-out provision recently enacted specifically. We talked in a little bit more general terms in terms of the importance of, from our perspective, of understanding that there is diversity and the need for coexistence among various production processes, and that there was and is no safety concern I think that there is obviously strong feelings about the issue over here in Europe. We haven't specifically taken a position on the opt-out provision, but I would say that at the end of the day, it's always going to be about what science tells us and what science directs in terms of making sure that it doesn't convey a sense of anything having to do with unsafety or any problems associated with biotechnology, because you know, there are hundreds of scientific studies to suggest otherwise. We want to make sure that there was a clear understanding that regardless of how they approach this, we don't want to convey a sense of anything having to do with the safety of the product. We're committed to that.
This question comes to the line of Philip Brashear, Congressional Quarter. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Secretary. First of all, you referred to a conversation. Could you describe that more? Was there a back and forth and between you and the ministers? And could you talk about about the GI issue and to what extent you discussed that? What was your message and what response, if any, was there?
The way this was structured, it was a working lunch. Essentially, they gave me an opportunity to have opening remarks, and then each commissioner was given the opportunity, if they so chose, to make a comment or two. I would say that we had a wide variety of commenters. I would say the GI issue came up almost in every one of the presentations made from the European side. What I suggested was there certainly is an appreciation in the United States and in Europe, I think, for the fact that there are opportunities to promote high-value products. We have a trademark system in this country that basically provides, in our country, in the U.S., provides protection for those who essentially try to create an identity or a brand, and with that identity or brand, they believe carries value, and they want to protect that value. That's a concept that I clearly understand, and that I articulated an understanding. At the same time, there is a significant difference between that system and a system that essentially seeks to exclude the use of what have been treated up to this point as relatively generic terms. And I think there's no question that there's going to have to be a serious negotiation about this, because I think there was an understanding from the EU's perspective that they understood that we were not accepting of that notion, that somehow they could unilaterally impose a restriction on a generic term. What I tried to do was to suggest that we ought to be able to find a way to protect the value without necessarily limiting market access. That will not necessarily be easy. It's further complicated by the fact the EU has entered into a tentative agreement with Canada, which frankly doesn't fit particularly well into our trademark system, and it's not fully complete yet. The Canadian agreement hasn't, as I understand, the text has not been completed, and the various procedures for approval have not been completed. But that process doesn't really fit particularly well with our trademark system. So we have some negotiation and some discussion to take place, but I think we both conveyed an understanding that's an issue. I think both committed to trying to find a way to find that sweet spot where value can be protected but market access is not denied.
Our next question comes from the line of Jerry Hagstrom, the Hagstrom Report. Please go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Secretary, on that last point you were talking about, in which you would seek value to be protected but market access not denied, what market access for what? Are you referring to cheeses that couldn't be imported into Europe? Or I just don't understand. And also, if you could comment further when you said that the conversation was important but difficult. Do you come away from this feeling optimistic about agriculture and TTIP or what?
Well, Jerry, geographic indicator is an issue in which there is an effort on the part of some to essentially take the process but that has created a certain product, whether it's a cheese, a wine, a beer, whatever it might be, and to take that process and basically protect the ability to use that term that historically has been connected to the process, so the process of producing feta cheese, the process of producing Parmesan cheese, the process of producing, mozzarella, and attempting to protect that from allowing others who use the same process to use that term, which would create some serious issues with reference to market access. Our system, which is a trademark system, essentially says, look, if you have something special about your area that you think or about your color sequence of your product, and you want to protect that, you don't want anyone else to use that you can provide that protection through a trademark system, and you can provide it very specifically so that you could protect the value that you've created by the development of that brand. But you wouldn't deny people the ability to use the generic term for a similar product that they would produce in a different place. And so that's the issue, where you essentially have to create a system that preserves the ability to sort of market your product as unique or different or better, but not denying someone the ability to make a similar product and market it accordingly. And that's the rub, if you will. That's the conversation. This is not an easy issue, and you ask if I'm optimistic about TTIP. What I do know is this: I'm optimistic at the end of the day that both producers in the United States and in Europe will understand that in the long, long term, trade agreements cement relationships, solidify relationships, end up benefiting, if they're structured properly, end up benefiting all sides. Certainly in agriculture, the NAFTA agreement, you see a very balanced trade between Canada and Mexico and the United States in terms of ag, and you see improvements in innovation being encouraged because of it. And you see significantly increased trade opportunities for all three countries in agriculture. I think that can be replicated if the agreement is done right. Now, in the short term, that last phrase, if the agreement is done right, is going to require a couple of things. It's going to require a lot of work. It's going to require a willingness of people to sit down and communicate frankly and honestly with each other, and it's going to require a willingness to lead on this in terms of not letting the naysayers and not letting the folks who can take who can criticize without knowing what the end result's going to be. Those who are opposed to trade just per se, not allowing them to essentially define this agreement before it's actually crafted, and that's a communications challenge. And we talked a good deal about that today, about the need for there to be some level of educating the general public and policymakers about what the, you know, what this is all about, without necessarily going into the details that would disclose negotiation strategy or negotiation positions, but at the same time not creating a void that is solely filled completely by those who will mischaracterize or those who will jump to a conclusion that this agreement is going to do something harmful. So this is tricky. It's hard. It's very hard, which is why it takes a long time for these agreements to come to fruition. But you have to be persistent, because you understand the long-term benefit for the economy and for the country is going to be enhanced by having these kinds of strong bilateral arrangements.
The next question comes to the line of Brian Wingfield, Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Secretary. Thanks for doing this. On that last point, the commission is going to change here in a couple months, and we're going to have elections here in the U.S. I'm wondering if there was any discussion about how those factors may affect the TTIP and whether you think that it might become harder after the commission changes.
You know, I don't think that the upcoming elections or the elections that have taken place are at the end of the day going to change the dynamic all that much. I think that, candidly, what I heard from these ministers and commissioners is what I would probably hear from anyone in their position, which is that they have their hand on the pulse of their people, and they believe they know what their people will accept and not accept, and that to a certain extent is driving driving the discussion, which is normal because these folks are not only ag representatives, but they're also politicians. Having said that, they're also leaders, and as leaders, they understand the long-term benefit to the economies of their countries in the EU, and we certainly understand the benefit to the U.S. economy. So it's that long-term benefit and that long-term relationship that can be solidified that I think encourages us to continue and to not be discouraged by the challenge or the complexity or the difficulties that trade agreements generally incur. This is a tremendous opportunity for American agriculture. I mean, you know, we have an interesting dynamic with the European Union, and I think there is a lot of upside potential for both in terms of ag products, in terms of value-added opportunities. I'm sincerely hopeful that with a lot of hard work we can get to a good place.
Thanks.
Operator, if there aren't any other questions, I appreciate everybody's participation and